Hello and welcome to the Raptors Reaction Podcast on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, brought to you by Campbell's new chunky spicy soup. It's time to get fired up. Honestly, a really entertaining game, I think, in terms of just how much amusement, just how much excitement, the fact that there were like 27 lead changes in this game, the fact that it was dramatic right until the very end of these two teams struggle their way. And I mean struggle not in the way that, like, you know, Frodo and Gollum struggled at Mount Doom, spoiler alert, and you know, got the ring destroyed. I mean, like, struggled as in, like, in Pokemon, when Magikarp uses struggle, or any Pokemon uses struggle, really, after they have no more moves left. That's how this felt. It was a struggle. It was a struggle right until the very end. And I don't want to. I'm sure it's very painful for the Raptors to lose like this. Like, I'm actually genuinely sure, and I'm, especially as time goes on, I become more and more sympathetic. You know, I don't think the players are looking to tank. I don't think that that's their stated goal. I don't think that, you know, we're all mature enough to understand that point, right? And we also understand that there's also very legitimate reasons as to why players are missing games, whether that's injuries or personal tragedies. And, you know, like, nobody asked to be in this situation. So when the Raptors lose 10 in a row, of course it's on the players, of course it's on the organization, but it's a mixture of circumstances meets bad timing, meets, you know, past decisions and the consequences of those all together into the situation where the Raptors lose 112-109 against the Washington Wizards. From a tank perspective, and I know this is probably the only thing that people are holding on to in terms of just like, well, maybe this is a silver lining. This obviously does continue the Raptors losing ways, and they have now lost 10 in a row, the first time they've done so since the very start of the 2010s. So over a decade now, the Raptors have not lost 10 in a row. And also on the other side, you know, this actually gives Washington a rare win. They have 13 wins now in the season, which actually briefly takes them above Detroit as the second best or second worst team in the league. And the Raptors obviously hold Detroit's pick. So that actually moves them from 32 to 31. I mean, look, that does that really matter? No. Obviously, it matters a little bit more in terms of what the Raptors are at the top. That's the tankathon, you know, update, and it's, to me, quite frankly, very boring, and you know, that's where it is. But, yeah, I mean, I'm sure on a human level it's difficult for these players to lose these games and play really hard and to get discouraged like this. I'm sure it's not particularly, I mean, it's definitely very embarrassing to lose to the Wizards in any circumstance, especially in a season where the Raptors already were that team that Kyle Kuzma talked about. Remember when he was like, at this point, it's just about not being that team that breaks the streak. And it was actually the Raptors who broke that streak and also lost to the Pistons earlier this year for the second time as well. But putting all that aside, I got to say, entertainment-wise, highly entertained. You're talking about Raptors playing at 8 p.m. on a Saturday. I'm sure a lot of people have already tapped out of the product. I'm sure a lot of people are casually looking once in a while to see what's going on. They might check the lineup, see what names they recognize, and tap in for that. Of course, there are also diehards, and I'm sure many of those are listening to this podcast right now, understanding that, hey, we're going to be here for every game. We've seen worse. Trust me, I've heard that from a lot of people recently, a lot of season ticket holders especially. That line of, I've been through worse. You know, this is not new to me. I'm not new to this, and we can get through this. And I think that that's so admirable. I think that that's exactly why, you know, not to say that makes you more valid as a fan, but, you know, I think there is certainly a dedication aspect. And just because the Raptors have, you know, a couple of, like, inconsistent years and this one being really bad, people don't just log out. I get it. Like, I actually really appreciate that, especially based on what I do. But putting all that aside, highly entertaining for a Saturday night. This game was a roller coaster. This game was wacky. It was unpredictable. It had lots of comical moments. It had lots of moments of frustration. And then at the very end, the Raptors actually got a chance to potentially force overtime. And if there's anything you've known about the Raptors playing Washington, particularly in Washington, I might add, It's that there are some late heroics. There is just a penchant of the Raptors, especially in the regular season, doing some pretty crazy stuff at the end of games in Washington. And Bruce Brown was all set to be one of those names to drill a big, improbable three after, for some reason, he pump faked the first chance to look at it, which was more open, then kind of like tiptoed, maybe got his feet underneath the line. Regardless, he didn't make the shot. But the Raptors actually did have a chance because despite being down six, you got Gary Trent Jr. Flailing his arm to the point where midair he did a high jump kick where he kicked his leg up to a shooting arm just to draw the foul on Kyle Kuzma. And of course, it was reviewed by the Wizards, but it was unsuccessful because Kyle Kuzma actually did foul Gary, tapping him on the shooting elbow as he was going up. But then Gary did the most exaggerated, I'm not even kidding, when he did a high five midair between his two limbs to draw the three-point foul. He's actually smiling and laughing about it as he gets the ball to shoot the free throws eventually. Makes all three ice in the vein style. The Raptors then fouled Denny Avdija, who had been one of the best Wizards on the night. One of the only Wizards that you look at where it's like, oh, well, this is a guy who plays competent basketball. Like, he might have his head on straight. And then all of a sudden, he misses back-to-back free throws. The Raptors get the rebound. They have no more timeouts at this point. So they got to run the ball up. Gary, of course, is the guy who has it, bringing the ball up. And at this point, Gary has a game-high 31 points. At this point, Gary is leading this whole entire thing in terms of who was the main character for this game, at least for Toronto's side. It was Gary Trent Jr., who, by the way, missed last night's game in Toronto with back spasms. So the fact that he came out here and gave you 31 points is already incredible, but more importantly, the entertainment factor. And he brought the ball up. And I could have sworn he was going to take that three. I mean, it wasn't going to be a good one. The Wizards sent two to him. He did the right play, and he gave the ball up. There was two to his left. He gave it to Ochai, who swung it deeper into the corner for Bruce. If Bruce had relocated deeper into the corner to get a more open shot, he might have needed to pump fake. Or whatever, it wasn't a great decision. My point is, I thought Gary was going to go for the hero ball shot because that's how this game should have been. It could have been Gary's second dramatic game deciding three in Washington. Obviously, he had one last time in Tampa as well. Raul Neto tried to flop, and Gary just absolutely drained a three to for that game winner there. That was the last time, by the way, the Raptors were down this bad. Although, again, even in Tampa, they only lost nine straight. This one, 10 straight now, with no kind of end in sight. I mean, if you lose to Washington Wizards, you're losing every team in the league. This is the worst team in the league. We saw it on full display tonight, just the amount of clown stuff that they do from a possession-to-possession basis. But in any case, Gary, turned down the shot. The Raptors, unfortunately, or fortunately, whatever you want to call it, I'm not really trying to participate in this debate. Obviously, rationally, the Raptors have very little to play for, and it's better to keep their pick. But it doesn't necessarily interest me to see them lose ever as a fan. But regardless, they lose this game. Gary, though, like I mentioned, the main character in this one. So many plays, especially in the fourth quarter, that just absolutely, took center stage there. Gary with a huge three off the wing from Kelly to take the lead back after Washington had taken the lead. The Raptors had an 11-point lead. Washington came back, took the lead. Gary knocks down a big three to retake the lead. Then he steals the ball. And as a 3-on-1 fast break, and as always, Gary keeps the ball on a fast break, and he smokes the layup. He's so mad at himself. Gary's just lying down in bed, let's just say, right? He's got his arms crossed. He's just staring straight up, and he's just so frustrated. Like, how could I blow that layup? The Raptors, at least, they were able to get possession on that play. The ball swings out to Gary, a chance to redeem himself wide open from three, but he smokes the open three. Raptors still get a chance to get the rebound, and eventually Gary cuts through the middle, making a really good cut. Kelly found him on the cut, and Gary made a really good extra pass, his second one of the night, to Bruce Brown, just an absolute dime to Bruce Brown, who hit the layup at the basket. So he immediately redeems himself. But then, the next play down, Kelly Olynyk has the ball at the top of the floor, tries to whip it into the corner to Ochai, who was open, with an accurate pass, which is what Kelly typically does, would have had a good chance to look at it, although, Ochai was not particularly hot from three. And Kelly ended up whipping the pass literally into like the 20th row. Like, you know, he was halfway to the strike zone with that pass. But that wasn't even the most egregious play because, again, Gary comes down the next play and he uses a nice screen from Kelly. Washington's defense is Swiss cheese. And Gary has an open, like, lane to the basket. And he decides to try to go for the dunk rather than the layup. And maybe you wouldn't even understand that because last time he went for the layup, he missed it. This time he tries to go for the dunk. And he just, like, absolutely smoked the dunk right on the rim. Like, he cocked it back and then just, like, he banged on the rim. Like, he banged on the rim. It was a bad miss. Of course, as you would expect on a shot like that, when you miss, which is a very rare opportunity, that leads to your floor spacing just being completely ruined as your teammates are, like, absolutely shocked as to, wow, that shot did not go in. And Washington broke the other way and they scored. And not only did you get the call from Matt Devlin, which is, by the way, it's one of the rare joys that I don't get to have as much because I'm at the games. So at the home games, I don't get to hear Matt Devlin's calls. Like, I can only hear them when they're on the road. So when you see him on TV, like, you know, the moments, and because you know Matt is just like such a, I mean, look, I can personally to the test the fact that Matt is a really good guy, you know, really personable, really positive guy. I think he genuinely believes it as well. I know a lot of people see it as selling. Of course, sometimes he's selling the product. Of course, they want you to keep tuning in, of course. But generally speaking, Matt's just a positive guy. Like, he actually does want these things to break right for them. And so when you see a play like this in a very vital moment in the fourth quarter, Gary has a dunk and he smokes another rim. You just hear Matt Devlin's call. Like, and I'm not even sure how you would spell that. I tried to tweet it out. I think I went with a capital M, a lowercase M, and then another capital M. But just that call of that, like, you know, he's just swallowing a bit of poison, a little bit of bitterness each time because you're like, damn, we needed that one. And of course, Matt Devlin also has the "we need this," but the is next level. And that dunk not only got the when he on the rim, but when Washington scored going the other way, leading to Toronto calling the timeout, Matt Devlin hit him with the second a double Like, that is like Mike Breen on Steph Curry bringing the ball up against OKC, hitting the game winner, the double bang call. This is the opposite of the double bang call. Is a double from Matt Devlin. So shouts to Matt. I'm going to tell him too, man. I have to tell him this is my favorite call that he's ever done. And he's done so many good ones, you know? But I just love the you hear a lot these days. That's not to say this is all on Gary. Gary, again, he was really, really good for the bulk of this game. 31 points in 34 minutes. Again, coming off of back spasms. And, you know, Matt did try to, you know, explain the fact, okay, Gary probably smoked the dunk because his back's acting up. Like, I can't imagine it's easy to play basketball with a bad back, you know. And if you told me that kind of jacked up his three as well, him going 1 of 7, even though I thought Gary took pretty good looks, you know, I believe that as well. But ultimately, like, I thought Gary gave it his very best effort. In fact, I thought Gary actually, outside of that one, well, outside of the dunk and also the layup, the transition play, he did a really good job of finishing around the basket. In fact, most players for the Raptors finished well around the basket tonight. And, you know, Gary did a lot of muscle finishes, used his patience, you know, just used a variety of under-the-rim finishes. And, you know, that same thing with Ochai Agbaji. Ochai was 0 for 5 from 3, but Ochai did a great job of finishing around the hoop, getting a couple tap-ins, putbacks, 5 offensive rebounds. He was, like, the majority of that for Toronto. So, like, this is not to say that, like, this is on Gary. But, like, yeah, it was one of those games. And also, by the way, I just think the reason I'm highlighting Gary is because just entertainment-wise, it was so entertaining. Like, there was one play where, in the third quarter, he was setting a screen on Kyle Kuzma to get, I forget who Kuzma was guarding, but whatever. So it was one of his teammates to get open. Kuzma, at this point, had just picked up a technical for complaining about calls. Then he had smoked a layup of his own. Then coming back on defense, he, like, not only trucks Gary, but he whips his hand behind him and, like, clocks Gary in the back of the head. And Gary lays down after this point, and he's like, okay, whatever. Like, you know what? I'm just going to eat this because I took one for the team and you know, it's a foul call. For some reason, the nearest official on the sideline there, Jenner Schroeder, call the foul on Gary. And when Gary saw that, he literally flopped up, like his whole body. He like did the electric worm, or what do you call that? Just the worm, not the electric worm. I'm confusing the worm and the electric slide. In any case, you know what? I'm going to call it the electric worm. That's what it felt like. If you zapped a worm with like 20 volts from a battery or something, like that's what it looked like when Gary saw the call from Jenner Schroeder. Luckily, the two other officials were like, "Hey, hold on! Like, not only is it not a foul on Gary, I think Kyle Kuzma committed a flagrant act here," and they went to review, and it was a flagrant one. Which, by the way, did not stop Kyle Kuzma, because two plays later, he like literally another screen he had to fight through. He just ran straight into Kelly's Olynyk's chest and knocked him over, and Kelly was quite winded after that play, and it was clear that he was just running through him. Like, regardless, whatever. Not that I'm asking for a guy to get ejected from this game. Again, the whole game was just chaos. It was entertainment. It was like it was Raptors Wizards, man. That's Raptors Wizards. You know, even in a tanking scenario, no matter what's going on, if the Raptors are playing in Tampa, if they're playing against the Wizards when they're tanking, if they're playing the Wizards when they're good or they're bad, there is going to be drama. This is Michael Ruffin throwing the ball up into the midair and Mopey catching it and, tossing in the three to force overtime in a game where the Raptors eventually won. This is Corey Joseph knocking down that corner three off that really nice play design, driving kick from DeMar DeRozan. This is Serge Ibaka hitting a corner three in double overtime to eventually take out the Washington Wizards. Like, this is just Raptors-Wizards culture. This is what happens. So there was a lot of extra dramatics. On top of all that, like, I think for me, if I have to think back on it, and this has probably been like 20 minutes after the game's done, I would say rationally, like, I the regret is the Raptors didn't get the ball back to Grady enough. You know, out of all the people who are making silly plays, the rookie was, to me, not that silly. Like, the very objectively silly rookie who likes to do, kind of just nasty puns with his last name, he was actually the most serious player on the night for the Raptors. Like, that he did a really good job, knocked down his shots early, but also went to the basket. I have this theory that, actually, I'll drop this here another time. But in any case, he went at Corey Kispert and drove it on him and hit a turnaround jumper. Corey Kispert, by the way, was also awesome. I'm going to give him the Gerald Henderson Award winner. He knocked down a crucial three at the end there to make it a 6-point game. But yeah, Grady, I just thought that, he played really well, and I thought that the Raptors just didn't get the ball back to him enough. As the game went on, certain other players rose in prominence, Gary being one of them, and Gary was more effective scoring the ball, although he was 10 of 26, but I think a lot of that was, like, honestly, he took a lot of good shots. He also took a lot of shots, so whatever you want to call it. It doesn't really matter to me at this point. The games are not, as important, clearly. Raptors also made some lineup changes. They brought Bruce Brown off the bench, and they started Jamias Ramsey. And even though Ramsey didn't play that much, and Bruce Brown ended up closing the game, including missing that three at the end there, also missing some free throws as well, too. Although Ochai also missed three straight at one point, but that was earlier in the game, so people forget about that. But in any case, I didn't mind it. I thought Ramsey did a good job setting the tone defensively on Jordan Poole. He, like, literally first play of the game, he picked him up full court and bumped him the whole entire way. And, that's just kind of what he did all night was the coverage on Poole. That allowed Abaji to guard Kyle Kuzma, and I thought Abaji did a good job on Kuzma as well. The Puzma combo, as they're affectionately known, the Puzma combo, 7 of 18 for Kyle, including a tech and a flagrant, and also Jordan Poole, who had a bunch of turnovers, but ultimately did also make some great passes. Raptors did throw a lot of blitzes and double teams at him, and he still had 12 assists, including the game clinching pass where he passed out of a double team into the opposite corner to Corey Kispert, who knocked down the corner three. It was actually a really well-executed play, so not quite Puzma on that one, but ultimately speaking, I thought at least the way the Raptors started with Ochai and Jamias Ramsey on those two did well. And I think that's what the Raptors need, is they need a wing defender and they need a point of attack defender. Pretty much to handle most assignments in the league. Of course, they also need rim protection behind that as well. And right now, due to the injuries, they don't have any of that. But at least based on the players that they have available, this is as close as they got to it. And, in terms of just straight wackiness, this is probably the most wackiest thing I've seen from the team all season. And obviously, we've seen a lot of it, right? But at one point in the second quarter. Actually, it started at the end of the first quarter, and it bled into the second quarter as well. The lineup on the floor was Jorn Wara, Javon Freeman-Liberty, Bruce Brown, Ochai Agbaji, and Garrett Temple. Now, I believe Ochai was replaced by Grady about a minute in, but they played about 5 minutes of this lineup where, again, it's Jorn Wara, Javon Freeman-Liberty, Bruce Brown, Ochai Agbaji / Grady Dick, and Garrett Temple. And the number one thing that stands out to you is like, wait, hold on. Nobody's above like 6'5 in this lineup. And obviously, there's nobody who's a big. Like, that's just five guards. And that's exactly what happened. The Raptors played five guards. And the one that they picked to play center was actually Garrett Temple, which is kind of amazing to me. I think, and we'll get Garrett again next week on the show, and I'm very much already looking forward to asking Garrett Temple about this exact look. But when has Garrett Temple in, and he's 37 years old, he is the fifth longest tenured player active in the NBA. He has played for many different franchises, and obviously he's always played his role no matter what. So sometimes he's been point guard, sometimes he's been shooting guard. I'm sure he's played some small forward, maybe even some power forward, I suppose, sometimes. But I'm sure never in his life, in his career, has he ever played center. And it got me thinking because one of the things, the start of this week was the Raptors had a coaching seminar, an open coaching clinic, where the media and also lots of like local coaches were invited to attend. And it was a great event. And I was watching the practices. And at one point, Garrett was taking some reps as like the dribble handoff guy. And of course, when I say center, like it's nominally center. Like he's playing the role that Kelly would have played. Or he is operating at the top of the floor for dribble handoffs or ball screens. And instead of popping out, he's mostly going to roll downhill. He did also get some pick and pop threes as well. But regardless, he was the guy who was playing Kelly's role. So he was the five. And we did see some of that in those open practices. However, I just thought that like, oh, this is because Jonte wasn't there. So someone's going to bump in and get some reps. Number one, at the start of this week, I didn't think that the Raptors would play Garrett Temple because even in blowouts like the Kings game, they didn't play Garrett Temple. And then how could you imagine that two nights later, not only is he playing, but he's playing center. Unbelievable. And by the way, full credit to that lineup. They actually won those minutes. They were plus five. And I believe like the 4 minutes that they played with Garrett Temple playing center. So you have all these things happening in one game. This is why I say this game was super entertaining for a Saturday. It was a struggle fest the entire way. Washington did lots of silly things all throughout the night. Of course, the Raptors did the same thing. You know, there's plenty of guys that sub in for the Wizards that you don't know. I'm sure for a Wizards fan, they're probably looking at the Raptors like, who are some of these guys too? But ultimately, that's actually the type of game. And, you know, if anything, I wouldn't even have minded to see another shift of Garrett Temple playing center, not only because of, you know, just genuine curiosity, like for the sport of basketball to see what it looks like. Because we haven't seen it for Garrett, but like with all due respect to Muhammadu Gay, I just don't think he's like a positive contributor in any facet right now. When he first came into the game, he got a block because Kyle Kuzma tried to take him one-on-one to the basket. He blocked him. And then he cut the, going the other way and threw down a dunk. And I was like, whoa, okay, there we go. That's exactly what he's going to do. Outside of that one 10-second sequence, it was just all bad. And, you know, I don't want to dismiss the whole thing, but like even the fact that he's a hustle guy, 7 minutes, he comes in and gets zero rebounds and is a minus nine in those 7 minutes. And like absolutely a big part of that. Like I actually think that Garrett Temple, functionally speaking, in terms of if your whole objective is to just win the minutes, I think he's actually better in that role than Gay is. But in any case, put that aside, there was just so much, you know, silliness that went into this game. And unfortunately for the Raptors, like, they had a chance to win. They missed a lot of threes, 8 of 33, only fitting that they missed a game on an open three. I thought they did a great job of going to the basket. Washington's rim protection was just not there. Rashawn Holmes was great on the offensive glass, but generally speaking, he wasn't really able to protect the basket enough. And the second unit for Marvin Bagley, you know, didn't really do that either. And so the Raptors had a lot of guys finishing at the basket. Gary, Ochai, Grady. These guys aren't necessarily strong finishers at the hoop, but the Raptors, especially the way they run their offense, with their five at the top of the floor, and sometimes their five, again, is Garrett Temple. they're going to space out, and there's going to be that cut, and the Raptors are really working on, you know, knowing how to cut, making the right angles at those certain moments. And they did a great job. And you got to give it up to Ochai. I think Ochai in the last couple of games, he's really been using athleticism a little bit better, especially in semi-transition. He's just taking it, being aggressive, and just gone. You know, he's not really making great moves, but he's athletic enough, and especially in open court, you can see how he would get an edge or an angle and just take that and be aggressive. Like, in some ways, it reminds me of, like, young Norm. Young Norm had a little bit of this. Now, young Norm also had, like, super long arms, and he was stretched a lot of finishes. Ochai had also long arms, too, but it's not quite the same. He kind of bodies up a little bit more than Norm does. But ultimately, like, there's a little bit of that. I'm not saying he's like Norm. I'm just saying in this specific facet of his aggression and transition. So I'm liking what I'm seeing from Ochai there. He did a little bit of that against OKC as well. Ramsey knocked down two threes, which is great. That's big. That's, for me, that's the one big thing for him that he needs to get to the point where, you know, he's consistent from three. The rest of the offense, whatever, I'm not exactly expecting him to bring the ball up and create that much. I don't think the Raptors are either. I mean, they're basically looking to bring the pass half court and then get the ball to their center, and the Raptors start to cut and run their sets from there. But, like, yeah, I mean, you know, defensively, the energy is good. But again, one top three, one corner three, just continue to try to knock those down. If he can find any consistency there, I think that's where he finds his path to the league on a more full-time basis. In the rest of it, Jordan Wara continues to have some, like, real sleepy moments, but also at the same time, like, you also see some explosive ones where that's why it feels like it's all out of nowhere, because he's kind of just, like, fading into the background, kind of, like, not playing, like, you know, all out, kind of like full speed. He wouldn't say he's an explosive energy guy or anything like that. He's not exactly like watching Gerald Wallace. But then you saw him with an incredible chase down block in transition, and you're like, okay, there is some real athleticism there, but I just don't feel like he uses it. Like, he probably uses, like, I don't know, you know, half of his athleticism the way he typically plays. Javon had a really nice night offensively the other night, but tonight he missed a couple of his chances here. Also thought he was just, again, not good enough of a passer to didn't read the floor well enough to, you know, make the side of passes. Like, when Jordan Poole's anticipating, like, oh, he's reading, like, oh, he's driving on that side of the floor, and he's clearly not driving to score because he's going straight to the corner. He's probably going to whip it into the opposite corner, like a pass along the baseline. And I'm the helper on the other side on the wing. I'm going to dig down, and I'm going to intercept this pass. Like, when Jordan Poole can even read the pass that you're trying to make, it is a little bit too much just telegraphing that pass. But in any case, I think Javon's whole thing is he's a scorer, and today he didn't really score well. I mean, for all the guards who did score well at the basket, I don't think Javon did much. Bruce Brown coming off the bench, I don't know. I mean, it's not really going to change anything. It's like rearranging, you know, deck chairs on the Titanic at this point. But I do think with Bruce Brown, the one thing that's starting to just, like, baffle me is, and I looked it up, the Bruce Brown off of drives since joining the Raptors is shooting, and tonight was even worse. So I think it probably drops it down a little bit. But he's shooting 32% on drives on this season. He puts him above, in terms of guys who have actually driven, Jalen McDaniels. That's it. And McDaniels only drives once per game, thank goodness. Bruce Brown drives 2.8 times per game as a Raptor, which is, for example, that's more than Gary, who does 1.9, more than Grady, who does one a game. It's high. Like, outside of the point guards, there's being Scottie Barnes, 4.6, and Emmanuel Quickley, 4.4. And Dennis Schroeder, before, when he was here, 4.4. Pascal Siakam obviously did a lot of handling, 5.2. 2.8 for Bruce Brown in terms of drives. He drives a lot, especially on a per-minute basis. It's probably just the same as the other guys. He's shooting 32% on drives. And it's just something where it's like, I don't understand, like, why he's choosing to do that as much, because a lot of times he's driving against a set defense. And the other thing is, I just don't understand why he's missing so many of these chances. You know, like, I wouldn't say that Bruce Brown was ever, like, an elite slasher or anything like that. But, like, even last year, for example, with the Nuggets, he was at 45%. Maybe this is a bit of an anomaly as well. But in any case, I just feel like he comes up short on a lot of these drives. And then he's always kind of like, you know, of course, you'll be a little frustrated when you miss some of these. But, like, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe he don't have to take as many as well. I think that's probably something where I would love to see. you know, happen. But in any case, like, somebody's got to, like, create some sort of momentum downhill, and I guess he sees it as that's it. Like, for example, even in Indiana, when it was, he drove 3.8 times per game in 33 games in Indiana this year. He shot 50% on those drives. So maybe he's just shooting a bad percentage, or I'm sure the spacing is worse here than Denver or Indianapolis. Like, I'm absolutely certain of that. But still, it bothers me. It just genuinely bothers me to see that, you know, he's just doing a little bit too much. I don't blame him necessarily for the missing the three at the end, though. You know, if anything else, it's just like, you have limited chance and you got a somewhat open look at it. But that's where the Raptors are right now. And I think for me, I just felt very entertained watching this game. You know, it's gone far beyond the point where you expect to see, or you necessarily even get disappointed. It's not to say that some people can't be disappointed. I'm sure that there's a variety of emotions watching this. But for me personally, I've sort of surrendered the idea that, like, okay, I expect them to win, or I expect them to compete. You know, I think I just want to see kind of them get through this and hopefully, you know, maybe learn one or two things about certain players that you haven't seen. But generally speaking, like, these are the type of games. And when you lose to Washington, too, it's like, there are no worse teams in the league than Washington. You know, like, Raptors have lost to Portland recently. They have lost to Detroit recently. They've lost to Washington now, right? Like, that part where you have to, like, hold on to your pride, at least to some degree, with this team, like, it's long been past the point where you got to let that go. Like, you just got to accept the fact that, as currently, like, on a day-to-day basis, in terms of what's available, in terms of what the Raptors had available tonight against Washington, like, genuinely one of the worst teams in the league. Like, it's not an accident that the Raptors have lost 10 straight. And, of course, it's due to circumstances. Like, I'm not putting those on. When the Raptors are healthy and available, this is a team that probably is closer to, like, a 500 level. When they have Scotty, when they have Jakob, when they have Quickly, when they have RJ. Like, I think that this is probably closer to a 500. Like, it's probably more of a play-in level of talent. But in this current moment, like, this is the results that you're going to see on a consistent basis. So, yeah, another one in the books. Before I get to the three stars, a message from our sponsor. Are you ready to get fired up for the next game? Nothing helps more than a bowl of Campbell's new chunky spicy chicken noodle soup. Let me tell you, it's got tons of seasoned chicken, veggies, and noodles all in a tasty spicy broth. So it'll fill you up and get you fired up. So take your day to the next level. See if you can handle the heat with the new chunky spicy chicken noodle soup. Okay, your three stars from this game. Number one star, Gary Trent Jr. I mean, come on, man. 31 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 steals. I know he had a couple bad plays. And I know people tend to get on Gary because he's not the new shiny, like thing anymore. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like anything he does is exciting the way that it was when he first joined. I think people kind of, like, got to know him and really seen, like, I wouldn't even say stagnation. He just kind of, like, got to see both the ups and the downs. And you just kind of, like, some people are like, okay, I'm tired of this. Some people are like, I'm still happy with this. For me, I'm still happy with this. I don't have that many, like, super high expectations. But ultimately, like, I appreciated the effort, like, on a personal level, like, on a human level. Like, again, he had a bad back, and he came out and gave it all. Like, that's, and he took it to the rim a lot of times. It took a lot of punishment. So I'll give it to him. And again, he made this game very entertaining for me. Your second star, I'm going to give that to Grady. 17 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, 6 of 13 from the field, 3 of 8 from 3, 2-2 from the foul line. He's hitting more threes at the top of the floor off of movement, off of screens. He's flying around. I mean, like, him and Kispert even playing each other to a standstill. I know that, like, if I told you Grady's ceiling or Grady becomes Corey Kispert, like, I know that's not, like, an exciting proposition to anybody. But at the same time, Corey Kispert's 25. Grady's 20. You know what I mean? Like, the fact that they're even on even reasonably level terms is a really good sign for Grady, because I think he's going to keep more and more steps. And I think that the movement shooting for Grady tonight was great. He also had a block at the rim too. Just solid. I think what the one thing with Kispert is he has a really good rhythm. You know, he's always, like, jittery almost, but he's, like, always shot ready. He, because of his jittery nature, he's always able to get 1-2 down and then put up a, you know, get himself set for a shot. He also has a much more compact shot that I just don't think that, you know, it's going to be similar for Grady. He's got much longer arms. He's much taller. He slings it a little bit more. Grady does. Kispert is very much, like, an up and down, like, loading kind of shooter. But I think the one thing with Kispert, especially that got him better and better too, is the fact that he got stronger. And you see now the strength that Kispert's able to play with at certain moments and just body guys, that's going to come for Grady. And when Grady has that element too, I think the other elements for Grady is it's going to separate him because he's already at a pretty good level shooting wise right now. So I'm happy to see him get back in a rhythm. I know there was a week there or so where Grady really fell off again, but now he's back on. He's the most exciting part to watch in these games. And then your third star, I'm going to give it to Ochai. I think Ochai has continuously played better and better now, and I'm really happy for him. Again, I want to see him use his athleticism more. He did miss two open corner threes that could have tied it at one point in the last minute, but still, I mean, 9 rebounds, 5 offensive rebounds, especially in a game like this, Washington is smaller, it just generally like not good. So like I think Ochai using athleticism, like of course there's been lots of matchups where he won't be able to do that. But still, I thought the blueprint of the way he played tonight, especially for an athletic player, like I don't care if you're athletic, but if you don't find all the instances to use that athleticism. And I thought Ochai did a much better job of his activity, you know, the early transition plays, the offensive rebounds, the cuts to the basket where he was out-muscling guys. Like, I love that. 2 blocks as well as steal. He's just been doing his thing. He did his job defensively. He's, like, probably the only plus defender, like, in the whole entire lineup. So, you know, whatever. But, yeah, still, shouts to Ochai. Your Gerald Henderson Award winner, that's going to go to Corey Kispert. 18 points, 2 assists, a steal, 4 of 6 from 3, 7 of 12 from the field overall. He's just becoming better and better. I don't know. You know, I think that, yeah, you could see him being a good bench player for like a playoff team. But, you know, for Washington at least, which is where he's going to stay, he's still on his rookie contract, I'm pretty sure. He's a starter for them, and I'm sure he's going to shoot 40%. He's just, you know, like you kind of know exactly what kind of player Kispert's going to be in this league. Yeah, he's shooting on the season. What is he shooting on the season? 38% from 3, 48% from the field. Like, yeah, he's a solid player, you know. And he hit that big 3 in the corner. So thanks everyone for listening. And yeah, I mean, the Raptors will play again on Monday. I'll be back to recap that one. In the meantime, you've been listening to the Raptors Reaction Podcast, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup. Have a happy rest of your weekend.